With your heart, Wilson Rush.
Yes, sir. Wilson Rush podcast at it again. We got the usual suspects in the building. C. Rush, how you doing, man?
I'm good, man. Just ready to open up the show. It's been a little while, and glad basketball season is here.
Yeah, it's like every season is here. It's a really good time of the year. T. Will, how you doing, man?
Pretty good, fine. It's November, and you got the smell of that wood going on, man, and I'm just excited about my Michigan Wolverines and my Duke Blue Devils on that hard court, man.
Oh, you said basketball. Whew, you scared me for a second. I was about to say, I must have missed something, but we got a good one for you today. Gonna give you our take on the Miami Dolphin situation, hazing and bullying. We'll give you our take on that. That's been in the news every single day since it's first broken. We got to talk to NBA. The average team is about 5 or 6 games in, and we also want to give our take on the Pistons. They started their West Coast swing today. And, you know, are things going how we expected them, or, you know, do we see things differently now? So we'll give you our take on that. And we'll also talk about those first-place Lions, the game yesterday against the Bears, and kind of preview the Steelers game. But first, we're going to start with Michigan, and we want to discuss on what the heck happened this year. So we're going to go ahead and get this thing started. All right, T-Will, let's go to you on this one. I know a lot of people were shocked at that game yesterday, T-Will, on Saturday, I should say. But I got to be honest with you, and I told you guys privately that this game would be a funeral. And I was actually surprised that it was so competitive and Nebraska found a way to win. And they tried to actually get a game to us, T-Will, but we still didn't take it. And that's what bad teams do. So just give us your take on this past Saturday, T-Will.
Well, this past Saturday just kind of confirmed and stamped of a few things that I didn't want confirmed and stamped fine. It really told me that we're really not a really good football team right now. In a lot of areas, fine. Defensively, fine. We have no pass rush. And our offensive line is well below average. I mean, any team who brings more than a 4-man pressure, guys, I mean, Devin Gardner has, you know, his launch point has to change every time. So we just seen a bad football team, can't really run the ball. The offense is even more basic than my offense at Southeastern, man. So predictable, you know, off tackle left, off tackle right, trap, play action, throwing on obvious downs. I mean, you kind of have to be creative in certain situations when you don't have the dudes per se. So right now we're not being creative. We're really basic and vanilla, and teams are just teeing off on us. Michigan State last week, they looked phenomenal, but we really didn't do anything. You know, we were just basic. And this week, nothing changed. We were basic. We were very vanilla. No flash to it. No tricks. I mean, and it's easy to tee off on the offense like that, guys. I mean, up front, we're weak. We do have strength in our skill position, you know, with Jeremy Gallen. And sometimes I think we try to force the issue with the running game. But, guys, we're really not that good. And, you know, I just hope we can end the season on a doable note, because I think somebody's job might be might be taken from them before the end of the season.
Yeah, T-Will, thanks for giving your take on it, because, I mean, I got a lot of tough questions here, but before we get to those, I want to go to C. Rush on this one and just, you know, what is he seeing from Michigan before we get to the question? So, C. Rush, tell us what you saw and what you've been seeing.
I mean, like we talked about, two bad teams. One bad team had to win, and I thought it would be our bad team, but you know, it's just difficult to watch. You know, in my 29 years, and you know, out of 25 of those, I remember games at the Big House. You never hear booing like that, you know. So now they're turning on the fans. The fans are turning right now, you know, and they're not turning on the players. They're turning on the product, you know. We're not in position to even be competitive. You know, when you got two games back to back, I don't care if you're playing the Michigan State Spartans defense or you're playing the 2000 Baltimore Ravens defense, you cannot have negative rushing yards, you know. And once again, this week, we had negative rushing yards. If South Dakota State can muster up 200 yards on the ground against this Nebraska team, why couldn't we muster up 20? You know, it's just certain stuff that's very unacceptable, you know. We use the excuse beginning of the year, the offensive line is young, we got to reshuffle it, you know, it'll clean up some things, but they aren't prepared, you know. They obviously aren't prepared, and Michigan State laid down a blueprint of how to beat Michigan, how to get Devin Gardner off his point. And you know what? They blitzed right up to A-gap and like a PSL team, and we couldn't defend it. And, you know, like T. Will said, you know, the offense is like we're picking random on a video game. You know, it's not good when we can guess every play that's going on, you know. I mean, he was here with Lloyd Carr, but you're not Lloyd Carr. You know, we knew run, pass, it worked with Lloyd Carr because you know why? That team was prepared, you know. And what will we do to go back to the days of having two losses, you know? Now we don't even know if we're going to be above 500.
Yeah, see, Rush, I agree with both of you guys, but I want to give my take on this situation now. See, here's the thing when people talk about my players and my guys. Hoke's first year, he wins 11 games and wins the Sugar Bowl. Everything is fine and dandy, but those weren't his guys, but he won it. He gets credit for it. Last year we went 8 games. Now it's like, oh, we're still weeding some of Rich Rod guys out of here. Okay, so which one is it? You won a Sugar Bowl. It was all you. Now we lose. We have a decent season. Now we're still weeding guys out. This is unacceptable at Michigan. And I'm going to tell you this right now. I'm tired of people saying that we're elite. This fan base must stop saying we're elite. We are not elite if Coach Hope comes back. That's my opinion. Because Florida is going to show you that they're elite. Because Munchep is not coming back. I just don't believe that. Elite schools, this is not acceptable. Regardless on what the reasons may be. Some people say it's the quarterback. Some people say it's the play calling. I'm like you, C. Rush. South Dakota State racked up all those yards. We can't run against anybody. So it's the same thing again. You know, Ohio, we play them. It's going to be ugly. I said a couple weeks ago, after the UConn game that everybody ignores, and I told everybody, we will not win a Big Ten game on the road. So you know what? We will end this season 6-7. And it's going to be embarrassing that we're probably going to play in a pizza bowl game. This is embarrassing. He should not get another year. If we're an elite program, this is unacceptable. But T-Will, let's go to you on this. And let's just be honest. Who is to blame for this? Are we, A, just not that good, T-Will? Or B, is it Devin Gardner? Or C, or is it the coaches?
Well, right now, we aren't that good right now, fine. And I can't really say it's Devin Gardner, because if you take Devin Gardner out of the equation and stick someone else in there, fine, we may have a losing record right now. So we may not even be 6-3. We may be 3-6, because he's taking this thing upon himself, and he's won us a few games, fine. And yes, he has. I will say he's lost us a game or so also. But at the same time, fine, I think someone has to, you know, someone has to do something about this. There's no reason that Michigan should go 7-5, you know, 6-6 or 6-7, and no one has to answer for it. I don't think Brady Hoke, I think he'll definitely be on the hot seat. I think they'll give him another year. But I'm going to tell you right now, it's going to be a coordinator or something has to go. I think it's going to be Al Borges. And I know Brady is a loyal guy. He doesn't want to get rid of his guy. But I think they'll actually force that upon him for Brady to keep his job. And I don't blame the administration because we're Michigan, you know. And I know you say, fine, Hoke should be gone. I don't think so. I think it should be a change, a big change, and that'll be within a coordinator. And if we can't pick it up after that, fine, then absolutely, absolutely, I think he should be gone.
Now, T, I agree. He's doing some good things with recruiting. He's doing some good things, T. But I'm telling you right now, and this is the whole funny part. If he comes in the first year, T. Will, and we win 5 or 6 games, we all go, that's okay, because we're trying to get back to Michigan football. If he does not have a Sugar Bowl by his name, there will be no doubt that he will be out of here. You must show progress in your third year. We all know that. That's the way college football is. Some people aren't even fortunate enough to get that third year. If he did not win that Sugar Bowl with Rich Rodriguez players, as people like to throw out, you know, they're your guys when you win, but when you lose, they're not your guys. That's just something that's beyond me. But, see, I want to talk about this for a second. I think it's right what you said about Devin Gardner. It's ridiculous that people blame him. It's ridiculous. Why? Because when you're saying hut and the ball is hiked and there's 3 people in your face, I don't care if you're Joe Montana. There's nothing you can do about that. And I've been listening to some sports talk. People are saying, hey, put Shane Morris in. Shane Morris wouldn't want to play football anymore if he got hit like Devin Gardner's been getting hit. This is ridiculous. See, Rush, blame game. Who you blaming?
It starts at the top. You know, you gotta start with the coaching staff, you know. And like T. Will said, you know, he's a loyal guy, but this is unacceptable. So somebody has to get thrown under the bus, and I don't think it'll be Brady this year. You know, I don't care who you are at quarterback. You got 2 seconds, you're gonna throw the gallon every time. You know, that's why they have the reporter they have. You don't have enough time to get Funches the ball. And when Toussaint's not picking up blocks, you know, get him out of there. You know, it seems to be a loyalty to him for some reason. And I don't know why, because when things aren't working, you got to put something that works in. And I think Derrick Green should be in the game right now. And he can pick up the pass block a little bit better. But like I say, it's a loyalty thing I think that Brady Hoke has, you know, and accountability. It goes all the way through the program. You know, it's no way that the defense, bad as offense played, they played okay against these guys. But when the offense can't muster up anything against, they're not the black shirts like they used to be, but, I mean, you got to score. So it's a trickle-down effect, and it's affecting everything and everybody. When you can't protect the running, when you can't protect the pass, you can't run the ball for positive yards, which is the most crazy thing I ever heard in my life, 2 games in a row. And then you just, it's just bad, and you have no excuse. This is Michigan football. We are far from elite, but we should at least be serviceable, and that we're not.
Yeah, see, Rush, I want to ask you a quick question here because I know you guys can hear it in my voice because this upsets me to talk about this. Like, because this is ridiculous. It's out of line. This should not be happening. But see, Rush, you said something that their state pound us. You said, state is going to give Ohio a game. And I told you, I said, see, Rush, don't be confused. Michigan is a terrible football team. Now, Michigan State has a solid defense. They do. But we're just terrible. We're terrible. So now that you saw the Wisconsin black shirt defense lock us up, do you see what I mean now by that Michigan is just bad and Sparty is really, they're going to get taken to the woodshed when they play Ohio? Or do you still feel the same way?
The black shirts in Nebraska, but yeah, I still feel like now that things are happening like it is, Ohio State is going to have to come out and score a lot of points just to try to get in that football game. So, I think they're going to try, and they're going to score because I got to take into account that they're playing for a little bit more. They're not playing for a regional title like Michigan State and Michigan are. They're playing for something a little bit more, and it's going to come down with points with them. So that's why every week you're going to see them run the score up, and don't be surprised if they hit 70 against Michigan.
Yeah, that's going to be ugly. That might be the biggest loss in the Big House by point differential ever. That's going to be the last game of the season. I really do believe that. But I just wanted to put things in perspective, in my opinion, that we're just bad. Sparty has a great defense, don't get me wrong, but they're not on Ohio's level, in my opinion. So, T-Will, I want to go back to you, and I just want to be honest, because I'm going to say no to this answer. I do not believe, and I said this before the Nebraska game, that we will not win another game. We got two on the road against Northwestern, Iowa, and then we play Ohio, which is obviously won't be a win. I don't think we win another game, you know, unless we play a bad MAC team in a Pizza Bowl game. But during this regular season, T-Will, I do not see another win. What do you see?
Well, I have to say that I do see another win in the Northwestern team. But that may be the only one I see out of these final three games. Fine.
It's on the road.
Yeah, I know it's on the road, and I would like to say Iowa, but their style of play just goes against everything that this Michigan defense is standing for right now. And we look back at this Nebraska game, guys. It wasn't just a bad game for the offense. I mean, the defense. You talk about giving up, you know, giving up a game winning drive and a ton of yards to a third string quarterback. You know, so I mean. You know, you give Michigan's first team a third string quarterback. You know that guy's supposed to be getting ate alive. You know, but that didn't happen. So I mean, like you said, fine. It's a bad football team, and it actually took me a while to realize that, because I really do think that we have some key key personnel players in place for us to be a really good football team. And yes, the first year Brady did overachieve with that Sugar Bowl. You know, Coach Hoke did overachieve, and I think that we all kind of knew that. You know, and but the pieces that we have in place right now, guys, for us to finish, you know, we have 6 wins right now, to finish with no more than 7 wins on the season. That's definitely underachieving for the season. And fine, I will say our best bet is I think we will get a win at Northwestern.
See, that's the thing. And see, Rush, I'm gonna go to you, but this is still my thing. I don't see how anybody picks Michigan. We're not even favored in this game. It's like -3, -3.5. We've never, we would have to look that up, but I don't remember ever going Northwestern and not being favored. So C. Rush, I mean, do you see us getting another win? I just referenced the UConn game. How can you pick this team to win a road game?
I mean, sometimes you got to just hope things change, and you got to put faith in something, you know. Like I said, two bad teams playing each other, one bad team has to win, you know, so it's actually a coin flip. Yeah, it's on the road. Yeah, I understand. You're shocked about the UConn loss. I'm more shocked about Akron, you know, so that's at home against a team who won't win a game, you know, so it the same could be said for winning at home as well. So I thought we'd win at home, so why not? I shouldn't think we should win on the road against a team that's falling apart. Like Northwestern, who starting running back just went down today. But I mean, it doesn't mean a thing, because we did lose to Nebraska's third string quarterback. But I just think that as bad as we are, we're going to find out if this team is actually going to quit on Brady Hoke with the results of that game.
Yeah, like I said, you write about the word hope. I mean, I hope they win every game. I do. I hope as well. But there is no way. I just don't understand that I could say on the road they're going to win at Northwestern. Like, we can't beat a third-string quarterback at home, guys. I mean, this is sickening. So, but all right, enough with this. Let's just go ahead and move on and talk about something more pleasant. Make my head hurt. All right, T-Will, let's go back to you, man. Something a little bit more pleasant and nice to talk about. Let's talk about those Lions, man. Big win yesterday, and good teams win those games, T-Will, and bad teams find a way to lose them. And we came out with that win. We're in first place by ourselves. Green Bay's having quarterback problems. The Bears, I still, they got too many injuries for me to think, to be worried about them. But, T. Will, what you think about those Lions, man, those first-place Lions?
Well, like I said earlier, a few podcasts ago, guys, I don't care. I'll take every break that we can get. You know, we're continuing the streak of getting breaks and going on the road and picking up big wins. I mean, it's happening, guys, and it is happening before our eyes. And I know a lot of people are skeptical and still doubting. Hey, and I don't blame them because we've been let down so many times, but it's really seen to it really starting to feel like we're a real NFL franchise that's, you know, that the good things are starting to happen to. And I'll take it, you know, and looking at the Lions just from a whole perspective, guys, you know, like you said, fine. Green Bay's quarterback is down. You know, Aaron Rodgers is out of there. I really do think Jay Cutler came back too soon, and definitely against the wrong team, you know. So anytime you have a groin or hamstring type injury, you need a lot of stem and a lot of rest, you know, and he came back early. He said he skipped out on some rest, and you know what? That Lion defense kept him busy. And even though he almost finished the game yesterday, you know, kudos to him for that. But I just think he came back too early. And our defense, guys, is looking extremely solid, extremely solid. And division-wise, I want to win this division. I don't care how we win it. I don't care if they have to put an asterisk next to our name. This guy was hurt. That guy was hurt. I can care less. Somebody's ineligible. Whatever. If the Lions win this division, I'll take it, guys. So I'm really impressed with what the Lions are doing. I'm not going to drink the Kool-Aid yet, guys. I'm not going to drink it yet. I still, you know, it's a few games that I would like to see us win on the road and at home. And then I'll start to take small sips of that Kool-Aid.
Well, T. Will, you know, I've been drinking the Kool-Aid before the season started, and I just keep it on my kitchen table. I'm just being honest with you. But I just want to ask you about this, though, T. Will. What do you think that has to happen that you look at the game and you say, we need to do this to ensure that we win this division?
Well, I think our front seven has to continue to play just, you know, with intensity and just wild, you know, to have that aggression, continue to lay hits on people, continue to intimidate people, because one thing that's going to happen, guys, is we continue to play longer and longer. I know that we do it. We play a four field in a dome, but when we're playing outside, guys, and we have to have a pass rush, we have to be able to stop the run. If we're doing that in the cold and we're able to run the ball, then you know what? I think we can just about play with anybody in this league. So we have to continue to do that fine. And our front seven has to be feared. You know, our linebackers have gotten interceptions. They're definitely doing a great job in the pass game, but they're also getting sacks and TFLs, tackles for loss. And we already know our interior linemen, you know, they're in the trenches every play. So as long as we continue to be sound defensively, fine, especially that front seven, I think we can go a long way.
Yeah, I agree with you, T. Will. We just nasty. I mean, we are just nasty up front. The direct opposite of Michigan. I mean, we're just nasty. See, Rush, let's go to you on this one. You know, when McCown came in and drove the length of the field and got the touchdown, but in the back of every fan mind, well, I know what I was thinking. I was saying, okay, they still have to get to two. Then he throws it in the back of the end zone, and here comes that late flag, and I go, uh-oh. But we still put it out. What did you see yesterday, C. Rush?
I seen a team who's turning in the corner right now, you know. Reggie Bush had 105 yards on 14 carries. You know, that's 7.2 a clip. And that's at the end of that game when we drove down and Calvin sealed it with that touchdown, Reggie Bush, our run game, controlled that game. That's what elite teams do. When you got to milk that clock a little bit, you got to run the football. He got 11 and he got 12. That's what we did well. Matt, they weren't afraid to let Matt Stafford throw the football because he was accurate. 3rd and 3 under our old regime, we may have just ran a draw, got the field goal, ended up losing that game. But you know what? They said our two best players are better than your two best players. They went, they attacked Peanut Tillman and they got a touchdown on him. Riley Reiff made Julius Pepper silent yesterday. He had maybe one or two tackles yesterday. And we just, that was our first round draft pick from last year. Great job by the Detroit Lions finishing the game off. You know, yeah, things did get dicey with that last 2-point conversion attempt. But you know what? They were either going to Forte or Brandon Marshall, and we did a good job of stopping that. And good teams find a way to win these games. But you know what? The maturation process of the young guys and Reggie Bush staying healthy, and you know we'll get Ziggy Ansah back, but Devin Taylor, the rookie from South Carolina, excellent job of filling in for Ziggy, and this just was a real collective win, and it's good to finally see Nick Fairley becoming a playmaker that we know he is. It's good to see him finally get himself on track, and that them two interior linemen, that's a deadly combination.
Now, see, Rush, as you know, like I said, I've been drinking the playoff Kool-Aid before the season started because, in my opinion, we were only missing one thing, and that was balance, and we got it. And that's just my that's what I think. Even though we went 4-12, and you look at the record, you say, man, that's pretty bad. But go back and look at how we lost games. Go back and see that we were in just about every game. We were missing one thing. It's called balance. But now, see, Rush, are you drinking that Kool-Aid, that playoff Kool-Aid yet, or you like tea? You still keeping it on ice?
I believe we'll make the playoffs, and it's two things that we have to do. Beat Green Bay at home and stay healthy. If we do those two things, I know we can't control the second one, but that first one, if we beat Green Bay at home, we got to split with them. We were 2-0 over Chicago. I believe, I don't know who's going to be playing quarterback for Minnesota, but as long as we bottle up AP, we'll win that game. And then we'll have one loss within the division. And that's a formula for a playoff team, in my opinion.
Yeah, we gotta do whatever we can to make sure Seneca Wallace is back healthy. We gotta make sure he's playing on Thanksgiving. We gotta make sure he is playing. I mean, that guy, I don't even know why he's still on anybody's team, but we gotta make sure he's healthy. But T. Will, let's go back to you and let's talk about Pittsburgh. Another team that I always talk about is about tradition. The Steel Curtain. See, that defense has been a tablecloth this year. So talk about what you expect to see in this game on Sunday, T-Wheel.
Well, what I'm expecting to see is some of the things that we've seen on the road early on this season. Guys, I think this tale continues. You know, we go into Washington and win for the first time in like 200 years there. And we win in Chicago on the road yesterday. So I want to continue this tradition of, you know, I want to go into Pittsburgh, you know, that has this great tradition. And I don't know when the last time we won in Pittsburgh. It may not have been as long as it was in Washington, but I'm pretty sure it's been a long time, maybe since like our Barry Sanders years. But what I'm really expecting, Fon, is for this Lions defense to go in there and to really put their hands on Ben Roethlisberger, because we don't play the Pittsburgh Steelers a lot, so he's probably not as familiar with our defense. But if we go hit a guy a few times, we make him very familiar with us. Offensively, you know, I expect to see the same thing. Megatron just to be an animal. Reggie Bush to make their defense pay. And Matthew Stafford to just go in there and be a gunslinger, guys. I would be actually surprised if we went on the road and lost this game. If the Pittsburgh Steelers beat the Lions next weekend, I would be 100% surprised. They're not supposed to beat us. They're not a better team than us, and we should go in their house and beat them next week, fine. Rather handedly, I would say we at least went by a touchdown.
I agree, T. I mean, I'll be shocked, too. I'll be shocked and I'll be upset because I would feel that it would be a letdown game. The only thing that I think that they have going for them is Mike Tomlin, because he's not going to allow you to quit on him. So he's not going to allow that. So they're going to bring it. But like you said, T, in professional sports, if you're better than someone, you need to win. I agree 100%. C. Rush, what you think about that?
Well, I just agree with T. Will and yourself. You know, I believe we are turning that corner, and Pittsburgh's a bad team, and to be a good/elite team in this league, you got to win the games you're supposed to. You know, going back and looking at the outlook of the season, you know that Pittsburgh defense is old. Big Ben does not get along with his offense coordinator. You know, that run game has been spotty all season. He loses one of his best weapons in Mike Wallace. So, yeah, we should. You know, Big Ben is a good quarterback when he has the weapons around him, when he has that slot receiver, and he has that guy that can stretch the field. But you know what? This is not 2009 anymore, you know. It's a turnover with teams, and right now they're in the lull, and we got to take advantage of them, you know. When you get them, you got to bring them down, because he is still strong. He still can make plays, but I don't think he's seen this kind of speed even with the Baltimore Ravens, you know. And he's seen elite defenses once or twice every year, but he hasn't seen the speed and the interior inside stuff that we have for him.
Yeah, I agree with you both. I really like where our Lions are right now. I really do. They're playing well. But like Jim Short said today, hey, it's nice to be in first, but 6 wins don't get you in the playoffs. I like talk like that because it's about remaining focused. It's not about where you stand in November. And I think good coaches and good teams know that. It's about, at the end of the day, where are you? So now, in my opinion, I think we need to play, you know, for home field now. I think we need to get greedy. And that's what I think. I don't think we need to limp in. I think we need to get greedy and try to play at home, because you don't want to go to San Fran. And you definitely do not want to go to Seattle. So I want to give a quick shout out to the Chris L. Davis. We won't do a freestyle today because we got a lot of things to cover. But shout out to the agency, helping clients with their brand and getting athletes professional contracts all around the world. So, yeah, we're going to move on here. All right, T-Will, let's talk a little NBA. It's back, a couple weeks into the season. But, T-Will, before we give our take on it, sorry I left this out of the meeting, but let's talk about our Pistons here for 1 second. We're 2-3. Like I said, we're starting our West Coast swing tonight against Portland. What have you seen from the hometown Pistons, T-Will?
I've seen a lot of positive things, Fine. I see Mo Cheeks. He's being a guy who's trying to see what he has right now, because early on we're playing some solid ball clubs, Fine. I mean, you talk about the Indiana Pacers, who's established. Talk about the Oklahoma City Thunder. You talk about the Bulls. So you talk about some solid teams that we're playing right now. And the Pistons, I tell a lot of people, you can't judge us at Game 3. You know, come see what we're doing around game 33 or 43, you know, 40, 50 games to the season. Because my thing is, right now we're still juggling rotation, see who's going to get what minutes. You know, do we want to play Chauncey at the end of the game? Do we want to go to another backcourt? You know, so we're trying to get some things figured out and sorted out right now. But what I do like the most, Fine, is that front line, you know, with Andre Drummond and Greg Monroe and they have a nice front line, and with Josh Smith playing a small forward, I am impressed with his inside the 3-point line game, guys. The way those three play basketball together inside the 3-point line, the way they pass to each other and share the ball, it's a lot of hockey assists going on out there with those guys. They all touch it, and it always ends up in something positive, like a dunk or a layup. So I really like what they're doing. I like the depth we have at the 1 and 2, guys. I really like the Jennings, Stuckey, Billups. Because when we first got Billups, guys, I didn't see him being used in this role. You know, but this role that Mo Cheeks is using him in, you know, is really solid. We have a lot of depth at that 1 and 2 guard position. You know, Singler's been coming off the bench, giving us huge minutes, playing a huge role, which I kind of figured he would be this season. And also, you know, like I said, using Chauncey, Chauncey's playing like the first 7-8 minutes to the game. Then you may not see Chauncey again until like the second half or to the end of the game, which is cool, and I love it, because now that helps Chauncey play more games in the season. And I think we're going to need Chauncey a lot this season down the stretch, you know, that 90-plus percent free throw shooting, you know, that big shot capability at any time. So he's definitely going to be an asset. And I'm telling you guys right now, man, I think I picked the Pistons coming in at an 8 seed, I said 7th seed at best, but I'm telling you, Fine, I think you said like 4th, 5th seed. I see that happening too. I mean, once these guys get rolling and they finally gel, this is going to be one of the most dangerous teams, not just in the East, but in the NBA, guys.
Yeah, I agree. And you know us, see, we usually say, you know, contender or lottery pick. That's what you need to be. But, I mean, if you look at our team, we're going to have this 3, 4, 5. you know, years to come. So it's like, okay, let's go in that 4 or 5. You know, even if it's 6, let's go in there. Let's get some experience. Forget the lottery. You know, let's try to get a free agent or two that we can build on. I agree with you, T. I like what I'm seeing. I like our depth. That's what I really like as well. Because just like road trips like this, like, it's going to be tough. But I think our depth is really going to help us. See, Rush, what have you seen from the hometown, man?
I mean, I love what I see so far. You know, we are going to continue to grow and gel together. That front line, you know, it's tough to score in there. You know, Andre Drummond made Roy Hibbert's life live in hell when they played. You know, that inside, we're just tough. We're just physically tough. You know, I forget which game it was, but somebody had a run out and Josh Smith came out of nowhere. You can't forget he's 6'9 himself, you know. So when you're 6'9, 6'11, 6'11 across the board, it's tough for those guards to go in that paint and finish, you know. And then now we're in a guard dominant league, you know. Once they try to come into that paint, we're able to alter shots and make them kick that shot, you know. I like the way that Chauncey's being used. I love the fact that Brandon Jennings, he's here. He's looking to pass first. He's still finding his way because he hasn't been surrounded with this much talent since Oak Hill Academy, in my opinion. You know, and he's going to find his way within this and get us going right. You know, Rodney Stuckey coming off the bench is a solid energy guy. You know, Kyle Singler can come down, knock some shots off the bench, you know, spacing the floor. You know, so I think, like I said, I had high expectations with us coming into this season because there were a couple teams who I thought were not going to be that good, even though people in the media think that they will be that good, Chicago and New York. But I think that with the way we're set up and how young we are and versatile that we are, we can do it. We can do some special things this year.
Yeah, I agree. I think. You know, we all agree on this. Mo Cheeks is, you know, juggling some lineups. He's doing a good job. And, you know, I really do have no complaints. I mean, we had two really tough games last week. We had the Pacers, and then we had OKC in town on Friday. And so I think we're going to have our legs, but I think we should get – let's hopefully we get this trip started right because we got Golden State on a back-to-back. And, you know, all they like to do is shoot the ball within the first 3 seconds of the shot clock. So I think it's very important that we beat Portland tonight. But T – let's go bigger picture, man. Let's start with the East. First of all, let's talk about the things that you expected to see. And have you saw those things, T-Will?
Well, realistically, fine. Starting with the Bulls, I really haven't. I just don't think they're going to be as strong. I don't see the Bulls being like a Eastern Conference Finals team. I see them making it to maybe a semifinals, but not an Eastern Conference Final team, guys. The Miami Heat. I mean, the Miami Heat are the Miami Heat. I mean, LeBron's getting better. D-Wade, to me, looks like he's slowing down a little bit, but there's guys around him on that team, you know, that are contributing. So, realistically, if the Miami Heat can really get out and win a lot of the games and really solidify themselves a spot in the East, I mean, they can rest D-Wade down the stretch and you know, get them ready for a nice playoff run. Brooklyn Nets. I mean, they've had some games. They've had some pretty good games. They look pretty decent early on. You know, they beat the Heat. So, right now, you know, they were riding, you know, really high. You know, but realistically, I like Indiana. Indiana looks solid. They had the all-around game. You know, Paul George looked phenomenal out there. And the more I look at him, guys, I mean, the more you see the Tracy McGrady similarities with him, in my opinion, when Tracy McGrady was younger. And he's just a budding superstar, guys. And the East is going to be extremely competitive, night in and night out. And fine, I'm just really excited to see the East. And these guys are just going to beat each other up fine. And at the end of the day, I can't wait to see who are the last two teams standing in the East, because if it's one of maybe four teams, I wouldn't be surprised right now.
Now, T, I want to ask you a question about the Bulls. Now, they looked better last year without Derrick Rose. Now, obviously, I'm not saying like, okay, well, Derrick Rose is hurting the team. You know, they can play without him. I'm not saying that. So what my question would be to you is, you would think that, okay, they played to their potential, overachieved, without their superstar in the NBA, which is tough to do. Without your superstar, overachieve. Most teams wouldn't do that, T. So would you say this is a chemistry issue or what?
It, in my opinion, it's 100% a chemistry issue, Fine, because these guys – when they were playing with D. Rose, they adapted and played that way, okay? He plays a certain way. He's going to score a certain amount of points, and this is how we play. They had to take a whole year and adapt to playing without him, not leaning on him, not settling in into a certain role, okay? Basically expanding their roles. So now with him coming back and them coming off of a whole season without playing with him, or that whole year without playing with him, I mean, it's kind of like, you know, now everyone's trying to find their fit. You know, basically they're just trying to find their fit, Fine, and like just like I said with the Pistons, don't judge the Bulls, you know, through the first five games. You know, get them another 20 to 25 games. Look at them at game 30, and let's see, are they still playing the same way? Which I doubt they will be playing the same way. I think Derrick Rose, his game would be done elevated, and everyone around him in that Bulls organization would have found their fit in their role. And if they didn't, they're probably at the end of the bench.
But that's the thing, though, T, is you know, I agree with you. It's an 82-game season. It's a long season. But when you're a superstar and you redshirt and take a year off, the pressure is going to be on you right away. So, obviously, the Bulls situation is going to get overanalyzed. That's just going to happen. But see, Rush, let's go to you. You know, let's start with it. I mean, are you seeing what you expected to see in the East, C. Rush, or not so much?
I mean, obviously, it's early. We don't know everything, but I knew the Bulls situation was going to be overanalyzed. Like I told you all from the beginning, I don't think that they'll be there at the end. You know, it's just, I can't put my finger on it. It's just going to be a gut feeling, you know, not to say that Derrick Rose isn't arguably one of the best players, point guards in the NBA. But, you know, when, like you said, when you take a year off and you come back, it can throw off chemistry, and then everybody else is a year older. You know, those nagging injuries with big man can alter everything. You know, when you're when those two are your cornerstones defensively, and they're like Noah's foot injury lingering, Carlos Boozer nagging knee injuries, that can take away a lot from your team. You know, Indiana, they're elite. They'll be there at the very end, you know. I want to see the dynamic when Danny Granger comes back, if they're going to keep him or trade him away for a more reliable point guard. That's going to be a dynamic which I want to see, because they're racing to get the number one seed. You know, Frank Vogel came out and said, we don't want to play game 7 on their court. We want to play it at home, you know, and referring to the Heat. But I want to see the dynamic when Mr. Granger comes back. Miami Heat, they'll be there at the end, as usual, somewhere in that Final Four. Good team, best player on the planet. You know, we'll see how they monitor D-Wade and see if they can get Michael Beasley into the fold and see if they start working Greg Oden back into the mix. The Brooklyn Nets, who I believe will be there at the very end, you know, it's going to be some growing pains with Coach Kidd, figuring out rotations, figuring it out. Because it's a difference from going from player to coach. I don't care who you are. It's only a few of them, like Lenny Wilkins, who he was player and coach. So, you know, hopefully he can make a smooth transition and get that team back to where I believe they'll be, and that's the finals.
Now, see, Rush, now I'm going to be honest with you. Now tell me if you don't agree with this, but that's what everyone is saying about the Pacers, about Granger. We want to see what it looks like. Here's my thing. I wouldn't even care what it looks like. I would trade him for a more reliable point guard. It can't get any better. The only thing it could do is get worse. I wouldn't even see what it looked like. We need a more reliable point guard for the playoffs when it becomes a strong half-court game, so he's not turning the ball over and over like he did last year. So do you put him in and see what it looks like, or do you just say, you know what, we're very good right now. Let's get a better point guard.
Well, that's the dynamic that I was referring to, because I don't know what they plan on doing. I believe he'll be moved anyway, but they could say, hey, let's just see what we got and with those two out there. And they could crowd the court up and mess up everything, because in my opinion, this is Paul George's team, you know, and that's just flat out. So would I take a look at it and see how it is, if I can go 6-7, 6-9, for my 2 and 3, I probably would. But like you said, And like I believe, they're going to need a more reliable point guard to end games than George Hill. If they can get somebody to win now, a win now point guard, I would trade him, you know, because for one, you're taking the risk of throwing Danny Granger back out there. You don't know what he has. He hasn't played in a year and a half. You know, when you take that long off, and it's not a torn something, you know, you start raising eyebrows, you know, when you try to come back and then you shut it back down again, that's damaged good. So it may be in their best interest to trade him sight unseen, not knowing what he's going to give you and getting somebody else in return.
All right, let's hurry up and jump back to T-Will and talk about the West here, because I know it's getting kind of late. I don't want T-Will to fall asleep. T-Will, what you think about that West so far?
It's not exciting. When I think about West Coast basketball, I think of it, you know, exciting, you know, Showtime type deal. You know, Kobe isn't back for the Lakers. Clippers look okay, but they have no identity. They still need time to gel. Golden State's pretty good, but all the action is in the East. Fine. I mean, the West is okay, but they have to come on stronger, because realistically, I mean, OKC is just sitting at the top, in my opinion. You know, OKC is sitting at the top, and then it's kind of like, who's next? So until those Clippers really come on, until Doc gets those guys going, because that's what I'm really looking forward to, seeing those Clippers down the line in the playoffs, see what they can do. So, and also, you know, paying attention to these Lakers when Kobe come back. So, I mean, that's where my attention is in the West right now. But it doesn't have that razzle-dazzle feel to it anymore that it used to have. So West is kind of down to me, but, you know, there's still some exciting players over there. Kevin Durant just came and tore it up on Friday at the Palace of Armor Hills.
Yeah, T, I agree with you. I got to be honest, though. You know, before the season, you know, we clown the Lakers and say they're bad, they won't make the playoffs. But if Kobe was healthy and played the whole season, I think they could have snuck in this thing. And even if he doesn't come back too late, I still think they can make it. I agree with you. The West is boring, and it's not good at all. I mean, it just – the Lakers went in and, you know, beat Houston the other day. So, I mean, I got to be honest. I mean, if Kobe can get back, they'll probably limp right into playoffs. See, Rush, let's go to you. I mean, what do you think about the West, man?
It's OKC and the Clippers, then it's everybody else, you know. It's well, I can't say that. Golden State is pretty good as well. Those are only three teams I've seen in action. But, you know, at the end of the day, those are the teams with the marquee players and the teams that have been there. You know, I would throw Memphis in there, but Memphis changing coaches, I got to see if getting rid of a good coach, I don't want to say I can't support them, but I don't like them anymore. I used to be a Memphis fan, but you get rid of a coach like Lionel Hollis and who was doing an excellent job, you know, that just rubs me the wrong way. San Antonio, they went into the Madison Square Garden and just demolished a New York Knicks team who I believe is vastly overrated. But like I said, those top three teams, they're going to be there at the end. And I just want to see the dynamic that Doc Rivers has on that Clippers team. Is he going to preach the emphasis on hard work on the defensive end and make them more a half court team when it really counts? Because it's all cute right now with all the dunks and everything. They're going to get out in transition because they have the best point guard in the NBA. But can he take that next step in the playoffs in that half court offense and make Blake Griffin just from an athletic, exciting player to an athletic, exciting, and elite player?
Now, see, Rush, since, I mean, a lot of people talk about the Clippers and OKC, and they kind of go, you know, hey, that's it. Do so you don't even put Houston in that conversation, or do you just put Houston there in the everybody else conversation?
I got to put them in the everybody else conversation. I'd actually put Golden State ahead of them in this conversation, because you know what? Harden and Howard, that's a great combination. But they need a point guard down there. Jalen is not that 1 month span than a couple years ago. They need a point guard, you know. And Patrick Beverley, once he comes back, we'll see how he does. But I mean, that's a good duo there. But I'll live with the sharpshooters up in Golden State before I put Houston in there.
T. Will, I mean, Golden State, I want to ask you this, T, because I don't know how I feel about these guys yet. Are they a team that is cute during the regular season, but then when the playoff comes and you got to be physical and that cute basketball don't work, are they still going to be effective, or are they just a cute regular season team, T-Will?
Cute regular season team. We all know those jumpers are going to stop falling one day, you know, and then what do you have to lean on or hang your hat on? It's definitely not going to be defense in Golden State. So, you kind of have to, you know, once you even out the season and say, you know, it is 82 games, Golden State's going to be hot for some of those games, and some of those games they're not. You know, I have to lean on the Houston Rockets being a slightly better team than them, with having James Harden and Dwight Howard. Just that combination of having a low post presence, a staple of your defense, you know, being down low with the big Dwight Howard, I have to give them a slight edge. And I'm always more of a defensive guy because I know, you know, that's more consistent. You can hang your hat on your defense. You know, that getting up and down, you know, it'll never win you a championship. You know, just like, you know, back when the Phoenix Suns, you know, they would have never won a championship with those Steve Nash teams because they just got up and down. You know, it wasn't really no low post presence. I don't even know who their center was, you know, so. I mean, they weren't trying to check nobody. They were just trying to score buckets. So, yeah, I mean, it's cute in the regular season. You know, I love to cut the game on at 10 o'clock at night, watch, you know, Stephen Curry, you know, do his thing down low. I mean, do his thing and knock down some jumpers. And, you know, it's nice. But at the end of the day, it's not going to win you a ring.
See, Rush, real quick, last word. Is it cute or is this thing going to be effective in the playoffs?
I mean, like I said, it's going to be OKC and the Clippers. So, I mean, it's going to be cute till they get there, you know. But I just, in my opinion, if I had to choose between Houston and Golden State, I'm just going to take Golden State because, you know, this is how I feel. And I've seen what this team does. And you add Andre Iguodala, you give them another year. Andrew Bogut finally stay healthy. They're a little bit deeper. And I just really think that their guard play is going to lead them past a Houston team. Those two match up. But when they run into OKC or the Clippers, they run out of bullets.
So what you're saying is if they can win enough games and get the number two seed, that they're going to make the Western Conference Finals?
Yeah, if things fall as like that, yeah, I believe that they could, you know, but they just, I mean, point out somebody that scares me. Houston doesn't scare me, you know. Everybody putting all this faith and stock in James Harden and Dwight Howard. I mean, who is that? Somebody tell me who their point guard is. How good are they? You know, I mean, Dwight Howard hasn't been. I mean, he's a good player, but stop putting y'all faith in this dude. I mean, come on, man.
Hey, all I'm saying is Patrick Beverley is actually pretty good, like he is. So I'm not going to sit there and say who's their point guard like he's a nobody. Patrick Beverley can play, in my opinion. He's a really good point guard. But real quick, last topic, we want to talk about bullying and hazing in the NFL. All right, T-Will. Now, we want to be clear on these situations. We never know the real deal. We never know the 100% truth. We read an article, we see an interview, and we think we have all the information, and we come out with a decision. But, T-Will, I got no questions here. I just wanted you to give your thoughts on this Miami Dolphins situation, and I'll go to you, C-Rush.
You starting off with me, Fine?
Yes, sir. T-Will, go ahead.
Okay. Real quick. First off, I want to say, Fine, that this situation right here, I want to say it's being blown out of proportion. And the reason I say that is, Fine, is the football locker room, especially in the NFL, it's not the same as a workplace environment as if you worked at UPS or, you know, in the business setting. It's not the same kind of a work environment. So a lot of things happen in that locker room that's acceptable, but are just totally unacceptable to people that are outside of that locker room. I don't think Martin is really the victim that he's being portrayed as, and I don't really think Incognito is really the bully that people are really trying to make him. So I really don't think that is really much of one way or the other, Fine. I really think that locker rooms are locker rooms, and it's almost like a sacred place for these football players. And for some football players, it's all they know. And people, you see these players killing themselves and things like that, guys. It's because that locker room has something to do with it. When you're out of that locker room, when you've been in there for so many years, that's all you know. And in the game of football, that thing is supposed to bring you together. The locker room is supposed to bring you together. But that thing can tear you apart, too. It can tear you apart. It can cause a divide. And to the average person, it may seem like bullying, but it's not. It's not. Because Ray Lewis, I don't think he was bullying his locker room. But if I guarantee you, if Ray Lewis walked in his locker room and he told somebody to do something, it was going to get done. Whether it was pick up some paper off the floor, whether it was to tape somebody's ankle, whether he walked in with a bowl of dog food and told somebody to eat it. Guess what's going to happen? It was going to get done. But it looks like bullying. You know, so he's not a bully, but these things do happen. The Detroit Lions, Lewis Delmas, he calls Scheffler cracker. Scheffler called Lewis Delmas the N-word all the time in the locker room. Now, I'm pretty sure it's some white people in the locker room that feels pretty uncomfortable with Lewis Delmas walking around saying that. And I'm pretty sure some brothers pretty uncomfortable with Scheffler walking around saying the N-word. But it happens, okay? And that's what happens in the locker room. And that should never be known to us on the outside. Because certain things happen in that locker room that we may say is unfit, but it just kind of happens. You know, Ron English, he just got fired from Eastern Michigan University, head football coach. Okay? Somebody leaked what was said in a meeting, a private meeting in their locker room. Okay? They gave it to the athletic director, who's not a football guy. And as soon as he heard it, he fired him that same day. Okay? It didn't make sense to a lot of people. But you know what? To a lot of people, that made perfect sense, too. So it's different, Fine. It's different, and it's tough to explain. But what I can say, Fine, is what I really started off by saying is I don't think Martin is as big of a victim as everybody's portraying him, and I don't think Incognito is as big of a bully that everybody's portraying him to be also.
Now, T-Will, now, you said a lot, so I said I wouldn't go ask no questions, but you said a lot. Now, I want to ask you this, because this is what I feel. Now, I haven't been in football locker rooms, specifically about Ron English. Now, this is how I feel. I want you to tell me if I'm wrong. If college football coaches were secretly taped, it would be a lot more people getting fired. Or am I wrong by thinking that? Because there's a lot of people, when Mike Rice did this, T-Will, there's a lot of people that came on and said, I bet you a lot of basketball coaches do that. That's not true, though. A lot of basketball coaches not doing that. A lot of coaches not doing that. That's not true. So this is my opinion, T, from not being in a football locker room, hearing football coaches talk. Am I wrong by that, T, or am I right?
No, you are correct, Fine. Some football coaches do take that approach that Ron English did. And when they said that about Rice, Fine, about the basketball coaches, when they said a lot of coaches do it, I don't think they meant like a big number, like 50% of the coaches out there do it the Rice way. I think they meant like a smaller number, like, you know, out of, you know, 100 and something Division I schools, there may be like 10 to 12 coaches out there that do it the Rice way. And to them, that's a lot. That's like, you know, a little less than 10% or around 10%. That's a lot of coaches. So I don't think people were saying it like half the coaches in the country or whatever. Well, I didn't take it that way. I can only speak for me. You know, and to me, when they say, man, I bet a lot of coaches do it like that, I'm assuming they're meaning around like, you know, maybe 10 to 12 coaches, because that is a lot of coaches. If they're doing it that way and doing that and going overboard like that, that is a lot of coaches. But, yeah, Fine, you're right. If a lot of college and probably professional coaches – you know, were taped and that thing got leaked outside that locker room, there would be even more turnover that's going on now in these jobs. I mean, it would be, guys, it would be, you think the revolving door is going fast now. My goodness. You know, so, yeah, you're right, Fine. You're 100% correct.
Yeah, because everybody not saw spoken Tony Dungy. You know, everybody don't coach football like that. He the only one that I saw do that, your former East Detroit coach. Guys, keep your mouthpieces in. You know, he was kind of soft-spoken. I haven't met too many guys like that, though. I just have to.
And those kind of guys, Fine, they're in the minority in this business. You know, those kind of guys are in the minority. I hate to say it, but they are. You know, you have people that are kind of mixed up between, you know, kind of getting hardcore and kind of soft-spoken. But you're talking about guys that are really soft-spoken from beginning to end. Those guys are in the minority in this profession, fine. And they really are.
Yeah, this was a good discussion. I'm glad we didn't skip this one because I was thinking about skipping it because we were up against it. I'm glad we didn't. But see, Rush, let's go to you, man, because I do agree with T that the whole thing was blown out of proportion. Things that are acceptable in society, we hear in a football locker room, and a person goes, oh, my goodness, what is going on in there?
Yeah, man. If I was 8 years old when I started playing football, if they would have heard my first football coach, Coach Bill, say what he said to an 8-year-old, I'm pretty sure he wouldn't be as highly loved in the community. But, I mean, it's football. You know, it happens, you know. It's a passionate game, you know. Everybody not Tony Dungy. Everybody not Coach at East Detroit. You know, it's a passionate game, you know. That's why I'm not surprised when Dez Bryant blows up on the sideline, you know. Now what happened between these dudes, I mean, it happens, you know. Here's one thing, though. Some brothers feel comfortable with people from other races saying N-word. They do, and wrong, but they feel that way. So, hey, if he feel comfortable with it, I can't tell that man how to feel. I know he can't say it to me. I pop him in the lip, but that's between him and him. So if he keeps saying it to you and you keep replying back to him and laughing about it, what is he supposed to think? But don't cry wolf and say go crazy when you – it's been going on for a long time. You know, I just feel it's this, though. And as a man, you got to be a man. And it's blown up probably a little bit out of proportion. But, you know, he was accepting of all this stuff. He told him to pay $25,000 for everybody to go to Vegas, and you can't come. He did it. So, I mean, are you a bully or are you just stupid? I mean, it's one of the two. I'm not paying attention. If I ain't going, I ain't giving you nothing. So you can play in the NFL just like me. But, you know, they're trying to make it a bigger story because it goes on with kids, in my opinion, you know. But what that's going to do is everything is so PC right now because it's jokes that I've said in the locker room with teammates that cannot be repeated. But you know what? Those are my teammates. We're in the locker room. We're chilling. We're kicking it. But if they read some of my text message that we used to send back into each other, like, oh, my goodness, he's the devil himself with that text message that he's sending. Yeah, but I'm not going to release that information about what's said between a brotherhood. That's why it's called a brotherhood. And you know what? Like T. Will said with the Lewis Delmas and Scheffler thing, that's between them. But you know what? It's blown out of proportion more so because now they're trying to make this the poster child of NFL stuff. In the Play 60 stuff, in the Pop Warner stuff, in the school stuff, saying, hey, guys, you can't bully. You got to be nice and do this. And that's not how it is because in the football game, when you're in a pile, somebody's going to talk about your mother. And you're going to be like, oh, he said something about my mother, ref. And the ref going to look at you like second down.
Hey, I'm glad we didn't skip. Did you bring up some very good points? You talk about our peewee football coach that has been loved in the community, that has been a mentor in the community. Hey, African-American, you having problems, single mother? Send him to Coach Billy. But see, Rush, you bring up a good point. If people knew the things that he was saying, But you know
we
what?
We all turned out okay.
Look how people turned out, though. That's mm-hmm. my thing. Look how people turned out. Everybody under that umbrella is pretty successful in some way, shape, or form that has played for Coach Bill Riles. So let's be honest there. Another thing I want to hit on that you said, C. Rush, you talk about some African-Americans condoning other races saying the N-word. Like you said, that's a personal thing. You can't control how somebody else feel. But the only thing about this story that kind of made me feel like, what are they talking about was this. They were calling him incognito, an honorary black man. So, see, Rush, for one, tell me what that means, because I don't know. And for two, how do you feel about him being an honorary black man?
I mean, is he got black on his daddy's side or mom's side, or he's just, they just saying he was honorary, like, we're going to make him a black guy for a day.
I have no idea. T-Wheel, before we close it up, how do you feel about him being an honorary black man?
I don't have too much history on the honorary black man stuff. I don't know if he came off tough and people want to say, you know what, you're a black guy or this, that, and the other. I don't know. I mean, I don't want to be an honorary white guy. I mean, I'm proud of who I am, you know. So, I mean, I am who I am. We all are who we are. And I just want to touch on the Lewis Delmas and Scheffler situation, fine. They went to Western Michigan University together and played together.
Right.
That started in that college locker room. So we talk about the professional locker rooms. I mean, that thing goes down to college. And realistically, when you get out of high school and you enter that college locker room, that's when a lot of these things really begin. A lot of these things. So a lot of these things, once you're in the NFL, guys, I mean, it's not like we're going to class together, this, that, and the other. We're grown. You know, after practice, I'm going home. You know, we don't have to see each other. So, realistically, man, I mean, I don't want to come off insensitive to anyone, but I don't think at this point in time in life that anyone's being bullied, you know. And realistically, no one at this point in time of your life as an NFL player should be able to make you do something that you don't want to do. Okay. Now, yes, we understand that's the unwritten rule. The rookies come in, they bring the donuts, you know, this, that, and the other. That's cool. You know, hazing has been cut back a lot because they said they were against it. But you got to pay your tithes. You got to go ahead and pay your dues. So they make you do those things. But as an NFL veteran, you know, to do these things, I mean, realistically, these are just bad decisions that this man was making in my eyes. You know, someone telling you, another grown man telling you have to do these things and this, that, and the other. Nah, I don't know. I don't want to be insensitive, but like I said, it's a little bit different when it comes to the locker room, and it's not just the professional level, but in the college level also. You know, these locker rooms are really sacred places, and you have to find your fit in there because you don't want to start anything in the locker room because that can take you a long way. Even if it's in college and you go to a professional level, that thing follows you. I mean, it's like a DUI. That thing is on your record. You ain't getting rid of it. So I don't know. Fine. To me, it's just different. It's a different kind of situation overall. But hopefully, it can be resolved with both of these players continue their NFL career.
Yeah, I hope so too. And there's another thing, real quick, before we close out, that I just want to hit on is. Because when my father heard the story, obviously he's a bit older, he can't believe somebody else is using that word. But I told him, I said, hey, I just got to be honest with you, Pops. I mean, it's not like back in the day. You know, locker room, you can say whatever you want to. It's okay. You know, that's the way it is. And people, you know, a lot of older African-Americans, they can't understand that at all. And I'm not even that old. My personal thing is, you know, I don't think anybody should be saying it. That's just me. But, you know, like C. Rush hit on. That's between you and that person. If you're going to condone it, if you're going to joke around in that way, how can you actually get mad at the person that's saying it? So I agree with you, T-Will. We're not being insensitive, but hey, if you're going to allow somebody to call you something, if you're going to pay for a Las Vegas trip and they say, hey, don't go, but pay for it and you're going to do it, I don't know what to say on that one. So, but anyway, we up to 70 minutes. Now, see Rush, man. You have a good one, man.
Yeah, I had a good one, man. Just waiting on T. Will to pay this Coney Island bill, even though he ain't gonna eat none. So,
T. Will, man, you still up, man? It's like 9 Eastern.
Yeah, I'm still alive and well, man, over here. Just want to give a shout out, man, to the mentor, the man himself, Coach Bill Rouse, who's still doing the same thing over here but now he's with Detroit Southeastern Jungleers, still doing the same thing, same mentor, still getting after it, same tactics, you know, and it's nothing like bringing the show, guys, from Lipke to the internet.
Hey, Coach Bill Rouse don't care about social media. He has not changed his philosophy. Well, all right. Hey, thanks for listening. And like I said, I'm glad we didn't skip that last topic. That went really well. Wilson Rush Podcast. Follow us on Twitter, Wilson Rush. Search us on iTunes, Wilson Rush Podcast. And we always on Podomatic. Follow us there. You'll get an email every time the link is ready to go. Thanks for listening, and we always represent 7 Mile, and we out. DJ Clips, Rev City, let's go. The Wilson Rush Podcast. With your host, Wilson Rush. Also with T. Lil, Vaughn Wilson, and C. Rush. What up, Detroit? 7 Miles. Red City, your world. DJ Clips. We the best. The Chemist Music.